because of a narrower geographical cover, smaller banks tend to be more likely to be affected by this type of effect of population age. So the solution lies somewhere that matches this excess savings to excess loan demand.
This is Behind the Vault, where we study the best in community banking. On this show, we talk with community bank and credit union leaders about their approaches, challenges, and successes in serving their communities in today's world. I'm your host, Rich Edwards. Our aim is to highlight and strengthen one of the most essential parts of our economy, the community financial institution. Stick around at the end of the show to learn how you can be a guest on Behind the Vault. And now, on with the episode. One of the bigger trends in the U.S. is the aging population. One of the bigger questions is, how much of a risk does that present to community financial institutions and how they provide financial services to those populations? To address that issue, we have with us today Dr. Ghazi Kabas. Dr. Kabas received his PhD from the University of Zurich, and he's currently an assistant professor of economics at Tilburg University in the Netherlands. He's the co-author of the paper Population Aging and Bank Risk-Taking, published in the Journal of Financial and Quantitative Analysis. Dr. Kabas, thank you for being with us today.
Thanks a lot for the invitation. It's really my pleasure.
So I've shown this paper to a whole bunch of community bankers in the U.S., and they're very interested in it, and particularly a lot of the research that you and your co-authors were able to pull together. One of the questions we get, though, is why would three European authors be so interested in relatively small banks in the U.S.?
Okay, so I think it's a very good question, because I think like there are two main reasons. First of all, the United States, being a very large country, provides us a very nice environment, right? So to set our research question, we need a country that has a large geography so that we can have areas where we observe population aging, and it's in some other areas where we don't observe population aging, and then we can make a comparison. And the United States is quite large to provide this type of setting, right? And the second and probably the main reason is state availability. In the United States, we can easily observe low-level mortgage lending, and at the same time, we can observe branch-level deposit holding. And to study our research question, we need both of these data. So this is the main reason.
So it's really just about the observability of the phenomenon, meaning you're pulling information from where, like the FFEIC call reports?
Exactly.
From Fed Reserve. Yes,
from FFEIC. And then we also use call reports data, and we also use HMDA data, the mortgage lending. At the mortgage level.
So all of this gives you, for an economist, like a really nice set of like rich data to look at and try to find like phenomenon like this. Okay.
Exactly. Because at the end, what we want to observe is both the liability side for bank in a very granular setting, and at the same time, we want to observe the asset side of the bank in a granular setting. And by granularity, I mean as granular as possible. And in this setting, if we want to investigate persons lending, we want to observe low-level data. And in the United States, we can easily observe this data. On the liability side, we would like to observe branch-level deposit holdings. And again, this information is available for the U.S. banks.
Now, why don't you tell us just a little bit about what your premise is? Because you were kind of looking at the combination of both financial performance and demographics, like just general, yeah, like community level, yeah, county zip code level demographics.
Mm-hmm. So in this paper, of course, we are interested in the population aging. So population aging is one of the important challenges that almost all advanced countries are experiencing, right? So the United States is aging. The Europe has its own problems, especially the southern European countries such as Spain and Italy. And on the far east, we have Japan and South Korea, right? So when you look at the globe, you will see that almost all advanced countries are experiencing population aging. And when we now start to think about population aging, we realize that actually we don't know anything about how population aging affects bank lending behavior. And this was our starting point. We wanted to understand how population aging affects bank behavior. And in our finding, we tried to understand if banks change their risk-taking, and by risk-taking, we use loan-to-income ratios at the mortgages as a risk measure, and how banks change their loan-to-income ratios as a reaction to population aging. And we find that population aging affects banks through two separate channels. The first channel works through only on the liability side. So one interesting fact about the seniors is that they prefer to hold their assets as deposits. So when a person, you know, ages, instead of investing in stocks, he or she takes her money and put into deposits, right? Well, if you think about it, this may be good news for the banks because we know that deposits are usually stable type of funding. So you can take the deposits and extend loans with longer maturities. This is good. But at the same time, when you think about seniors, they don't have that much loan demand. And because of these two channels, aging puts banks in a kind of a peculiar place. Because on the one hand, they have a very, you know, high lending capacity. But on the other hand, there is nobody that they can lend to. And we find that under these conditions, banks start to lend in areas where they don't have any branch. And then the mortgages that they give in these new quote-unquote areas have significantly higher loan-to-income ratios, which is kind of the main measure for risk take. So if you think about the period right before global financial crisis, Bernanke said that, oh, you know, there's a savings glut, right? So there is an increase in the savings. And then he kind of defined that, you know, because of this savings glut, banks started to reach for yield. In our case, population aging can create a similar effect. Higher lending capacity, banks don't have any lending opportunities, therefore they reach for yield in other areas with higher loan-to-income ratios.
So two interesting points I want to come back to. One is you were kind of saying the population aging aspect, that phenomenon, is not a U.S.-only issue.
No. So this is a very good point. We see that, actually. So there are a few other researchers replicated our study for Germany, and they find exactly the same results. And at the same time, the economists in Japan wrote a report, and they also find that Japanese backers are also complaining about population aging. So this is not a U.S. phenomenon. It is all over the U.S. countries.
Interesting fact, and I think, if I might be wrong on this, but Japan is really the one that kind of is leading at least the first world as far as, you know, this rapid aging aspect, and this kind of has to do with a lot with their particular demographics and, you know, their approach to immigration, but it is kind of that's a look into the future of like where we might expect to see the United States or Western Europe to go.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, in this report, IMF says that Japanese bankers had to change the business model of their banks to cater the needs of their older clients, right? So this kind of suggests that. So if I were a U.S. banker, I would look at Japan to see, you know, what would the future be in, I don't know, next maybe 10 or 20 years. I think this could be kind of a nice exercise.
So the other thing you were talking about was kind of your measure of risk or your proxy for, you know, banks exposed to an aging population become riskier. And that was using the loan to income ratio for mortgage products, correct? Is that your?
Yes. Okay.
You just talk a little bit about that, like how you looked at it and why maybe you picked that.
Yes. So, I mean, of course, at the end, we want to observe some variables so that we can work on it. A loan-to-income ratio is a variable that we can observe in the HMDA data. So this is the main reason why we use loan-to-income ratio as a riskiness, because we would like to use FICO scores, but we didn't have access to FICO score at the loan level data. However, this does not mean that loan-to-income ratio is a bad risk-taking measure. On the contrary, we have some other studies done by Fed economists at the Federal Reserve. So you know, these guys are central bankers, and they have access to this great data, and they show that loan-to-income ratio is a very good and strong predictor of loan default in the future. So that's why we use loan-to-income ratios.
Now, additionally, in the paper, you use like outcome measures, right? Like some version of non-performing loans to look at like what was the impact of that.
Yeah. So in the paper, so maybe I can first describe the time span of our paper. So in the paper, we measure aging between 1997 and 2007. So this is right before the global financial crisis, right?
Mm-hmm.
The reason why we kind of keep this time frame is that we wanted to use global financial crisis as an additional laboratory. So we wanted to see what would happen if the risks that aging has created materialize, right? So we wanted to see if these type of risks would ever bust. And to measure the effect of these risks, we use charge-offs, non-performing loans ratios for the overall bank's balance sheet, or also for just a typical mortgages. And we find that. So we divide our sample into two with respect to banks' exposure to aging, banks who had higher exposure of the aging before the global financial crisis, and the ones that had a low exposure of the aging. And before the global financial crisis, both of these two types of banks have a very low NPL ratios, which is, you know, quite good. But right after the global financial crisis, we see that the ones that had a higher exposure of the aging had significantly larger non-performing loans ratios. And this is quite both interesting and kind of dangerous for the financial stability, because, you know, once we start to observe higher NPL ratios, then the alarm bells started to ring, right? So because then we know that, you know, banks had to do something to cope with these high NPL ratios.
So I guess what one question would be, maybe was this phenomenon unique to the, you know, 2008, 2009 global financial crisis, considering, you know, that mortgages and collateralized debt obligations was such like a core player and all that? To put it another way, like, does the past necessarily give us a good insight into the future? Or were there elements of this that were maybe one-off and unique to that time period?
Yes, very good question. So one thing that we do in the paper is that we try to understand exactly that. We wanted to understand if this higher NPL ratio is just driven by this housing boom. And when we try to do our best to control for this housing bubble, we see that the effect is not driven by the housing bubble. So this kind of suggests that actually population aging can lead to similar problems also in the future. So it is not unique to this particular global financial crisis period. No, so whatever we do to control for that, the peculiarity of that period, our results still survive. And this is, I think, important for the overall banking.
So one aspect of this is that element of the aging population. What were you using to measure that, or what data was kind of going into your analysis to kind of show that? And I guess the question really, most important to this audience, is how granular is that, right? Yeah. To what level?
So yeah. On the mortgage side, we use mortgage level data. This is as granular as possible, right? And in terms of aging, we use counties as our unit of observation. And our measure of aging is the number of senior people, and these people are the ones who are above 65. So notice, I think I have to make this clear. Our results do not hinge on this 65. So when we use a lower threshold for instance, 60, our results survive. The reason is that there's nothing special about 65 for our story, because our story builds on the fact that, you know, these people who are late in their life cycle start to change their behavior. So this is our driving force. These senior people have a tendency towards deposits, but at the same time, they have a lower demand for the loan. So this is the driving force.
So that just the number of the age just becomes a proxy for the behavior. How they're going to interact with financial services. Not that there's anything special. Okay, got it. Let's talk a little bit about your conclusions, because there's some interesting things in there. Why don't you just give us an overview of that?
Okay, so we find that population aging through these two channels that I just described, so let me repeat these channels. Population aging increases banks' lending capacity, but at the same time, it lowers banks' investment opportunities, and banks react to that by reaching for yield, meaning that they increase the riskiness of their mortgages that they accept, right? And if you were a policy maker, meaning that if you are a Fed economist, this type of finding would keep you, awake during the night. The reason is that if we start to increase the riskiness of the financial system, it becomes more fragile, right? So this means that because of this higher overall riskiness, if one of the members of the financial system starts to have a problem, that it can create a domino effect and it can endanger the financial stability. We can remember what happened, with the SVB, right? So once a bank starts to develop a problem, then it can affect the other members of the financial system. And then, so our conclusion was that population aging can increase the overall riskiness of the system. So therefore, the financial stability can be in danger just because of the population aging.
So is there any element of institution size that plays a role here, meaning are smaller institutions more at risk than, say, larger institutions?
Yeah. So our finding suggests that because of a narrower geographical coverage, smaller banks tend to be more likely to be affected by this type of effect of population aging, because larger banks can easily channel the excess deposits towards other areas, because they're back from America, right? So they operate in, for the states, so they can easily move the fundings through their internal capital markets. But for a small bank, this could be a challenge. So therefore, for smaller banks, population aging can be particularly dangerous.
So that's more about not necessarily the number of assets that they have on their balance sheet, as opposed to their ability to better balance these two types of lenders. The depositor versus the lend heavy. And I think there's a really good exhibit in your backup that kind of shows the diversity. And we'll put links to all this in the show notes. But yeah. Okay. So what's the recommendation then? I know there's some references to maybe how policymakers might think about this, or maybe at the individual institution sides. Like, what are some takeaways about maybe how we could approach this, either as an industry or as an individual institution, to mitigate some of this risk?
Yes, I think this is where it becomes a bit of speculation, because in the paper, of course, we just try to identify the problem, but to be able to come up with solutions, we need to have a setting where we observe some of these suggestions are implemented, right? So that we can test. So that's why it's right now being, I will just speculate. So the essence of the problem is that the excess savings happen in one part of the country, but then the loan demand happens somewhere else. So the solution lies somewhere that matches this excess savings to excess loan demand. For instance, these smaller banks may prefer to buy a share of syndicated loans so that they can channel the excess savings towards these syndicated loans. Or, as you suggested, maybe as the investor may come up with a solution so that in areas where there is excess loan demand, these excess savings can be channeled towards those areas. But this requires more work. That's clear.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, hey, thank you very much for your insight on this. We really appreciate both the work, you know, making it easily accessible and available to everybody, because I know academics don't always work like that. So we appreciate that. But also your time today sharing your insights. If anybody's interested in you or more about your work, where can they go to find out more?
If they Google my name, I think my webpage just immediately pops up, and then they can easily write me an email. I'm always available.
Thank you very much, Dr. Kavis. Thanks for being here today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks a lot for the invitation.
This has been Behind the Vault, a production of Mindspan Systems, helping community FIs provide service like no other. Learn more at mindspan8.com. If you're a community bank or credit union leader and have a story to tell, please visit behindthevaultpod.com/guest. That's behindthevaultpod.com/guest. If you found this episode useful, leave a rating on Apple Podcasts, as that helps other FI leaders like you find the show. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for more insider stories from community banking on Behind the Vault.